Welcome to this our class on loving by grace. Many of you have probably seen the caption in the book. My name is Billy Curl. I live in Los Angeles. I've been in Los Angeles at this church for 42 years. I retired at the end of December of this year, and so I get a chance to travel around the country, around the world, and play with my grandchildren. And my granddaughter is the one who calls me every Saturday night, not only to tell me that she loves me, but she wants me to come by and pick her up and take her to worship with me. Unless she got some other ballet practice that she has to go to. And so Grandpa, you just pick me up next week because I got something else I have to do today. I'm not going to spend too much time with this except please, if you're in the right class, you may come on in. If not, yes.
I was actually going to introduce you, but I think you covered that.
Right? I did, yeah. Okay. I'm a graduate of Abilene Christian College. Before it was Abilene Christian University, somebody's already given me one.
You're good.
Okay. And I entered Abilene in 1962. I graduated in 1964. This will be two parts. I will have another class tomorrow, and I'm feeling really good because I see a number of students. And I see the class is about filling up. I was truly expecting about 5-6 people in my class with all of the classes that are going on. I thought maybe this class would be the one that would be the smallest, and when all the other classes would fill up, then the overflow would say, well, let's go try this one. But I'm glad that you voluntarily came in and that you are here today. You have to excuse me, I got up and thinking that my class was going to start at 10 o'clock. And I looked at the book and I read it wrong again. The second time I read it, I thought the class was going to start at 9 o'clock. I got here at 10 minutes after 9. And so I knew that I would be in trouble for missing the class and not getting here on time. So I'm a little bit out of breath, couldn't find a parking place. So I parked on the other side of the Welcome Center, and I ran all the way over here. So I'm glad that I started my exercises. I walk 2 miles every morning. And that helped me out. So I'm breathing a little hard, but not as hard as I would if I hadn't gotten used to my exercises. I want you to just hold on to the passage of Scripture, Romans chapter 12. And I just really want to look at verses 9 through verse number 13. Usually there are times allotted for questions, and the way I get around you asking me questions is that I talk all the way up until it's time to dismiss, and then I will ask if there are any questions, and you don't have time to ask any, so it makes me feel pretty good. Wow, I'm feeling even better. Everybody in the class has an A, and for just showing up. So I think that's really good. There is someone said that the church is full of hypocrites. And another one said the reason why they are hypocrites is because they don't practice what they preach. If that's what Christianity is, somebody says, I don't want any. Have you ever heard comments like this? I'm sure you have. Oftentimes people use them as an excuse for a lack of commitment. And the reason they can is because there is an element of truth in them. There are hypocrites in the church, and these are the people who don't practice what they preach. And there are people who show by their lack of faithfulness that what they have isn't worth very much. I heard the story, actually I read this story, about a man who was walking down the street leisurely, and he passed a bookstore. It happened to be a used bookstore. And looking through the window, he saw this book with the title that says, How to Hug. And thought it might be an interesting book, so he went into the bookstore to buy this book. Picking it up and looking at it and reading some of it, he became very disappointed to find that it was a volume of an encyclopedia that covered subjects beginning with the word how through the word hug. How to hug. Some of you have heard this, haven't you? Yeah. And the church is sometimes guilty of giving people an encyclopedia on theology instead of a practical demonstration on how to live out true Christianity. But the church needs to be a place where people can see the faith in action. It needs to be a place where people can experience the benefits of real love and acceptance. It needs to be a place where people can see a living demonstration of the grace of God. Please don't take this as being self-serving. Some people can, but please don't take it as such. But I was at the church where I used to preach. There was a lady walked in. I don't know her age, probably in her 70s. And the lady that came in and had a beautiful smile on her face, sat down on the right side in the pew, and we every Sunday at the same time at 8 o'clock. I'm feeling better and better. I like this. Whatever your motive is, it doesn't matter. I like it. And this lady would come in every. This lady would come in every day with this beautiful smile on her face. And for at the end of the service, she never rushed out, but she would just leave. See her again the next Sunday. And for 2 years, this lady did the same thing every Sunday. And in our church, we have this tradition of extending the invitation to respond to whatever you need the church to do for you at the time. Whatever your needs are, you have the privilege of walking down front and standing in front of the church and telling them what's on your heart, or also telling them what your needs are. And this lady, 2 years afterwards, walked down front, and she said, I was surprised. She had never said a word, had never spoken publicly, and I was really surprised. So she walked down front, so I said, here's the mic, what would you like to say? And she said, oh, nothing, I just want to be baptized. And I said, oh, wow. And trying, you know, being in charge, you don't ever let, and living in Hollywood, you don't ever let people see you sweat. So you, you know, whenever there's a surprise, you keep that calm look on your face. You act like it's just a routine thing of the way things are being done. So I asked her, fine, and people were surprised. And she's been here 2 years, and nothing has ever happened. And I wonder why. What did you say at this moment that caused her to respond to this finesse, to respond? And what did you say that caused her to accept the Lord and wanted to be baptized? And I have no clue. Why don't we ask her? So at the end of the service, I asked her, what did I say? What did I say that caused you to respond this day that you didn't respond a year ago, even 14 months ago? And she answered. She said nothing. She said, the first day I came, the second day I came, the second Sunday I came, I realized what I needed to do. And was, why did it take you 2 years? And she said, well, I sat there to find out just to see if you all believed what you were preaching. So I waited just to see if what you're saying is what you believe. And then it took her 2 years to be convinced that the majority of the people in our church really believed what they preached. So you're not, we have to be aware that people are watching us all the time, especially putting our words with our actions. And this text today stresses the importance of this practical aspect of Christianity. And so in this text, we're going to see some areas where grace affects the Christian. We'll see several areas where we will be challenged to flesh out our theology in everyday living. It's really a continuation of the message that's contained in the previous verses, verse 1 through verse 9. And there you will recall that Paul was sharing with us how the church is a multi-membered, multi-gifted body of believers. We are bound together by a mystical union with one another and with Jesus Christ, that we are joined together in a living, dynamic relationship in which every member is important, which every member is needed. And because we have been so placed in the body, because we have been so gifted by Christ, we have a definite responsibility to every other member of the body of Christ, and more particularly to the local church where he has placed us. And that responsibility is to exercise the gifts and the ministries that God has given us. And as we do that, the kingdom work will be accomplished through the ministry of the church to the glory of God. And so the message this morning, please don't give me some expressions that you hear me, because I'll get into a preacher mode. And I don't like getting into a preacher mode. I'm really retired. I just like to walk around and talk to you, give you a high five. But if you don't smile, I'm going to go into a preacher mode. And then I'll say, well, this is the conclusion. And then go to the next service. The message is that we not only have a responsibility in the exercise of gifts, we also have a responsibility in the exercise of grace, a responsibility to love by grace. That is a responsibility. God's grace is not only extended to us, but it is to be ministered through us, both to our brothers and sisters in the church, but it's also to those who are in the world. The point is that grace has an effect on us. Not only has an effect upon us, but it should affect our behavior. What are some of the ways that grace and the exercise of grace affects us. One is the major thing is our character. Look at verse number 9 if you have a Bible. If not, I'll just tell you what it says. In verse 9, it basically says love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. Cling to that which is good. And so in verse 9, we are told that the exercise of grace affects our character. Exercise. I had some health problems, went to the doctor, and doctor said, Mr. Kroll, first thing I want you to do is to take this medicine for your high blood pressure. And tomorrow morning, I want you to start walking. I want you to start exercising. Now, if you take the medicine and don't exercise, you're going to have a problem. So you have to do this. So I got up the next morning, and I don't know if anybody's familiar with Los Angeles, but I live near the forum where the Lakers used to play. I live 1 mile from where the Lakers used to play. They got rich and moved downtown, and so they left the forum. And so I walk every morning downhill, practically downhill. It's 1 mile from my house. 200 yards from my house, I was out of breath. I sat down, and I'm deeply. So I finally rest, turn around, and go back home. I was about to give up, saying, I'll just double the medicine and not exercise. But the next day, no, I have to exercise. I decided to do it again. I went to the same spot, out of breath, turned around, came back. I did it for 5 days. On the fifth day, I was able to make it to a 1 mile mark. I'm totally out of shape. Totally out of shape. Every day now, I can go 1 mile, turn around, and come back and walk 1 mile. Watch what happened. My blood pressure is just slightly high. It was extremely high. I can now walk with a... I ran here, and I'm still okay. I've lost, whether you believe it or not, I've lost an inch around my waist, and I don't have to go shopping for any more clothes because I can put on the clothes that I used to have. I feel better because I exercised. I do not have to take the same medicine that I took before. Listen, it affected my attitude. Now I am more patient with people. Now I can drink water and not crave sweets. Now I can do things that I never would thought of doing before, simply because I did the exercise. I know I got tired, but the longer I exercised, the better I felt. Verse 9 tells us that the exercise of grace affects our character. And the work of grace, of the grace of God, in the life of a Christian, or the life of a believer, is to change that person into the image of Jesus. And for that to happen, our attitudes must change. Our character must be transformed. And the greatest evidence of this change is now we can love freely and we can love fully. We can love by grace. And we have one of the elders in our church who will walk in and he'll make a statement. He says, I love you and there's nothing you can do about it. And I like that. I like the fact that he says, you have no choice in the matter because I'm going to love you regardless. Is there anybody here that knows somebody that don't like you? Oh, only one. Oh, wow, you are such beautiful people. Okay, those of you who are brave enough to say it. But there's a lady in our church that don't like me at all. She doesn't like me. I don't know why. Yes, I do. I just don't believe it. She does not like me. She even writes me letters, hate letters. She sends me notes of things that, everything that's wrong with me, she lets me know. And she'll look at me and says, I, and you know my first thought when somebody looked at you and said, I hate you? What's your first thought? Why are you here? Why are you coming? What are you doing here? I had to change my whole way of looking at this. And so every Sunday, I used to go up to her and speak to her and say hello to her. And turn her head like this. Wouldn't speak to me. And so I said, something is either wrong with me, something is wrong with her, or something is wrong with the situation. So let me figure out how I can resolve it. Rather than to look at her and say, what's wrong with you? I don't know why. I'm not doing anything to you. I don't know why you hate me. You guys, you need to go see a psychologist. You need to go see mental health. You need Jesus. and so instead of doing that, what I decided to do was do some experiments. I changed my whole mentality. I changed my whole character. Instead of walking up to her and presenting an image of something that she did not like, I decided to go to the other side of the building and just sit. And if we had eye contact, I would smile, but I would never speak to her. I would never make an overt effort to go, because whenever I got close to her, something would just come up in her that just, so I avoided her, not directly, but indirectly. 3 months later, she was coming, hello. You know, and I would look at her, and then I'd do the same thing the next week. So sometimes attitude change also causes a positional change. And so my position is not to try to impose my will, but by the grace of God, impose His will on people. If I may, one brother was teaching a Bible class, and he said, we're incapable as human beings of doing God's will, God's way, just like He does. So the best way to deal with people is to hide in Christ Jesus. So he said, what you do is put Christ right in front of you, then you get in Him. And whenever you get in Him, everything is going to be all right, because He's going to make the situation a lot better. But when you start to take over, then you step out of Christ, then God can't see you. He can only see you through Jesus Christ. And so whoever Jesus is, get within Him, and then God can see you. God can respond to you. God can care. So if that's a controversial statement, my class will be over in a few minutes, and you won't have time to respond to it negatively. Okay. In the King James Version, what time are we supposed to end? Anybody know? When you find out, would you let me know? Because I have 15 pages of notes, and I'm on page 2. Okay. Yeah. 10:15. Oh, good. I can go to page 7 before we finish. Our character must be transformed. In King James Version verse 9, it says, "Let love be without dissimulation." But the New American Standard also says it this way. It says this way, let love be without hypocrisy. The NIV has it a little different. NIV says love must be sincere. But the Phillips translation puts it this way, let us have no imitation. Let us have no imitation of Christian love. So how are we to live? Well, according to this passage, our love must be sincere. It must not be phony. It must be real. It must be genuine. It must not be put on or acted out. It is interesting that this word translated hypocrisy is the same word in the Greek which is referred to those who made their living on stage as actors. It meant to impersonate someone. It means to play a part. It means to assimilate or to feign or to pretend. And what we are being told here is that we shouldn't simply act like we love someone. We should really love them. When it comes to love, we can't merely play the part. Our love must be genuine. You know, I said I live in Los Angeles, so that's near Hollywood. And we have a lot of, not a lot, but we have enough actors at our church to say that we have some. Some are up here, some are wannabes, you know. But you can always tell an actor. Watch the company. With you, I am a different person. With you, I'm a different person. With you, I'm a different person. And can play the part so well that I can convince you of all of those different phases. And I met a lot of actors, and they are truly the best in the world because they can switch so quick. There's a little animal, chameleon. Is that how you say it? You know how they change? Actors can do that, so they can play a part. So we had this actor at our church, and oh man, A1 actor. That's how we rank actors. And you know, A1 is Denzel Washington. You know, but it wasn't him that came to our church. And so he'd gotten so familiar with us that the people in the church didn't pay him any attention. He was no big deal because we were very all there together, and we were just brothers and sisters. And so one day I walked outside before service was absolutely completed, and there was a line of people lined up in front of the building. And I'm looking around and said, what are these people doing here? Who are they? And it didn't dawn on me until he walked out. And when he walked out, you could hear these people screaming. I said, oh, they came for him. And so he had to sign all of these autographs. And so halfway through, he just ran out of time. So he called me and says, look, is there any other way I can get out of here? So we brought him back inside the building. The nice thing about all of those fans on the outside, they were very polite. They decided that if he came out, they would mob him. I want your autograph. But they would never walk inside the building, no matter what. Even the doors are open. Everything is open. They would not come in. They would wait for him to come out. So when they saw him go back inside, instead of coming inside, even though the service is over, they walked around the back of the building thinking he's going to come out on the other side. So even those people knew how to maneuver in life. So let's not be actors in our Christian walk, because that's another form of hypocrisy. We cannot play the part. Our love must be genuine. And so what he says next in this verse is very interesting. He says, this is how it relates to the living. He says, hate what is evil, cling to what is good. This is saying that the true Christian love rejects sin but not persons? I really believe so. All too often we fall into either one of the two extremes. Either we end up rejecting the individual in the hatred of sin, or we end up condoning the sin because they don't want to reject, or we don't want to reject the individual. But we can't love the individual and end up condoning sin or reject the individual because we hate sin. But you know, true love loves the individual while at the same time hating sin. You see, love without truth is compromise, and truth without love is legalism. We must have neither one. What we need in the church today are people who love everybody with genuine love. Love them just as they are. At the same time, we stand for truth and seek to help people to change by the grace of God. And we can do that without being fuzzy. I want to see if you really get this message. I read this in the early 60s. It was written in the late 50s. A state senator in Mississippi addressed the legislature, and hear the words that he used. He said, you have to ask me how I feel about whiskey. All right? Here's just how I stand on this question. If when you say whiskey, You mean the devil's brew, the poison scourge, the bloody monster that defiles innocence? This is that Mississippi senator. Literally takes the bread from the mouths of little children. If you mean the evil drink that topples the Christian man and the woman from the pinnacles of righteousness, gracious living, and sends them into the bottomless pit of degradation and despair and shame and helplessness and hopelessness, then certainly I'm against it with all of my power. But if when you say whiskey, if you mean the oil of conversation, the philosophic wine, the stuff that is consumed when good fellows get together, that puts a song in their hearts, you mean that stuff that puts laughter on their lips and the warm glow of contentment in their eyes? If you mean Christmas cheer, if you mean the stimulating drink that puts the spring in an old man's step on a frosty morning, if you mean that drink that enables a man to magnify his joy and his happiness, and if you mean that stuff that causes a man to forget, even only for a little while, life's great tragedies and heartbreaks and sorrows, if you mean that drink, the sale of which provides tender care for our crippled children, our blind, our deaf, our dumb, our pitiful aged and infirm, you mean that stuff, if it is sold, it helps us to build highways and hospitals and schools, then yeah, I'm in favor of it. That's my stand. I will not retreat from it. I will not compromise. You see, I'll be the only one to laugh. Okay? The exercise of grace affects our character. By the power of the Holy Spirit, we are enabled to love one another without compromise. Okay, I'm going to give you one more. I'll give you one more, and then in verse 10, look at verse 10. We're out at 10 or 10:15. Oh, okay. I'm not in a hurry. I'm going to really enjoy my stay here. With this badge, I get lunch, so that helps. In verse 10, it says, "Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Honor one another above yours." Those are our contacts. Our contacts. Loving by grace, our contacts. We find that the exercise of grace, which affects our contacts, it affects our character. But if it affects our character, it also affects our contacts. As we seek to live our practical Christianity, we're called to develop our relationship with other brothers and sisters in the church. And Paul reminds us that we are in the family of God. He said, that's who we are. We are brothers and sisters. We are reminded that relationship is the ground of our commitment to one another. Relationships are extremely important. Do you realize the best way to break a man is to put him in isolation? And part of our criminal justice system, when we arrest terrorists, and when we get to the most hideous crimes done by some of our individuals, we put them in solitary confinement. And if you let them stay there for a while, up to 3 months, if not more, they will be broken. and their ability to develop a relationship with others is extremely limited. And so that's where our lives are. We are people of relationships. We are people of contacts. That's why everybody needs a friend. And you know, I know thousands of people. I've traveled around the world twice. I lived in Africa for 6 years. There's a very, very few countries that I have not been. I met Idi Amin. Anybody ever heard of Idi Amin? Okay, he was a demagogue in Africa. I met Haile Selassie. I met the Queen of England. I met the Pope in Rome. All of that. But you know, if I had to list people that I met over the years and say I know, volumes couldn't hold them. But if you want to know how many friends I have, you know, you can count them on your hand. That's the most important thing. Not all those people that you know, not all of those people that you've met, not all of those people that you can say, I shook this person's hand. I got a chance to do that. But my friends are the ones that I can see that they are there for me and me for them. So if there's anything that you can get out of this particular lesson, develop more friends than you do contacts. Contact is good, but friendship and relationships is even better. And friends will be there, and contacts are very important. There may be some brothers and sisters that we like more than others, but we're commanded to be devoted to all, because we're all in the family. And you know, sometimes that's hard. Somebody has put it this way. It says, to dwell above with saints in love, that will indeed be glory. To dwell below with saints we know, well, that's a different story. There's a lot of truth to that poem. Sometimes it's difficult to dwell with saints below, but it can be done, and we need to learn to do it well. Learning to get along, and excuse me, since I don't know anybody by name, save a few, getting along with y'all is hard. But man, it is so rewarding when I can learn to get along with people down here. You know, I get along with God well, because I just do whatever he tells me. You know, my father was my best friend, because when he spoke, I jumped. Whenever he said do, I did. Whenever he said come, I came. You know, I just did whatever he said. He was my best friend, because I knew that if I fell down, he would pick me up. I knew that he would be there for me. But sometimes, you know, it takes a lifetime to learn who your real friends are, and you never know until something really happens the way you really need them. And so the latter part of this verse gives us a real key to encouraging one another. It says, honor one another above ourselves. You see, as we exercise grace toward one another, we regard others as more deserving than ourselves. This is what we do when we are exhorted to do in Philippians chapter 2 and verse 3, where it says, do nothing out of self Sis ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than ourselves. The practical outworking of brotherly love in Christ will be that we are eager to build up one another rather than to build up ourselves. Let me stop right there. And some of you I will see tomorrow, and others will sigh a sigh of relief, and I'm glad that's over. But I'm glad that you came today.